Hi, it's Dave here. This is my wife, Kathy.
Hello.
And this is The Cinemile, the podcast where we walk home from the movies. Today we are going to see the new Warner Brothers movie called Wonka, the tale, the prequel origin story of Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Kathy, how are you feeling about this?
It's one of those movies where I feel like I've been hearing about it for years and years, and now that it's here, I'm like, well, it's a big Christmas movie.
Is it a Christmas movie, though? Hey, let's not get into that.
It's not a Christmas movie. It's the movie.
That's the big cinema movie over Christmas.
So I'm excited to bring the kids. Our older one loves Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he loves Roald Dahl. And then I heard that it was from the director of Paddington, which has given me a lot of hope. So while I would have said like 6 months ago, I couldn't have cared less about this film, now I am excited to go and see it as like a family event, and because obviously the Paddington movies are so good.
I tell you what, I only discovered this information 10 minutes ago and not only did I not have an interest in this movie, I had an active disinterest in this movie. My feelings towards this whole thing has just been one of just like, I guess, I have an unfair bias towards just like the idea of a Willy Wonka prequel and Timothée Chalamet as Willy Wonka, just the whole thing, just look, just, and maybe it's the aftertaste of the Tim Burton Johnny Depp thing.
Tim Burton ruined it for us. Johnny Depp as Willy Wonka, like, I just think that's kind of ruined it for us. And I think it also feels like a kind of eye roll when I'm like, oh, it's just another of the same franchise. But actually, it is an original thing. It's not.
Yes, I believe this isn't based on an adaptation. Now I'm super excited because I'm like, Paul King, writer director of Paddington 1 and 2, like two of the greatest films ever made, has written this with the co-writer of Paddington 2 and is directing it. I mean, that is incredibly encouraging. So now I'm super pumped and excited.
And I think the Timothée Chalamet thing, what's his name? Chalamet thing,
yeah,
is
it.
He's been incredibly overhyped, and I don't really know him, but then when I watched Dune, I thought he was really good. I just see him out with Kardashians and stuff, and that's the kind of thing where you're like, his infamy is a distraction.
Yes.
And actually, it's got nothing to do with his acting ability.
I'll tell you,
I want to judge him on this film and not all that stuff, but what I'm just desperately hoping he doesn't do is a Gene Wilder impersonation. I think fair play to you. It's some job to take this on.
I also have the same feeling towards Timothée Chalamet, where I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen him in anything except Dune.
Yeah, but I feel
like he is.
Oh no, he was in that
everywhere.
Jennifer. No, he was in that thing about the, what was that thing with Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio. He was briefly in that.
Oh yeah. That was barely
sustainability
the thing that everyone hated. The end of the world thing. Don't look up.
So I liked it.
So did I. But I feel like he's got that Pete Davidson effect where he's incredibly just like, oh, we're all overexposed to him in terms of culture, and I seem to have been put off him because of that, and that's incredibly unfair.
Yeah, it's unfair.
And I agree. I liked him in Dune. So I'm going in with an open mind here.
But the kids are really excited. Brilliant to be bringing the kids to the cinema 2 weeks in a row because we want to see Wish last weekend.
I know, yeah.
Now we need to go and get our kids because obviously we sometimes try and get them to come out and talk on the podcast with us. It generally ends in chaos.
It's just too chaotic.
Yeah, so we decided not to bother.
And our kids are at the age now where, you know, if we put a microphone in front of them or we try to record video messages for their cousins and things, all that comes out is poo-poo, wee-poo, wee-wee, poo-poo, butthole, and all this kind of stuff. So, and that's...
Nobody needs
maybe to hear. That is the kind of podcast you guys want, but I don't think so. So, yeah, we're going to go solo on this one, but we will tell you, you know, what our kids thought of it on the other side. So we'll see you shortly.
I've spent the past 7 years traveling the world perfecting my craft. You see, I'm something of a magician, inventor, and chocolate maker. So quiet up and listen down. Nope, scratch that. Reverse it.
Mr. Wonka, I can see you're a man of great ingenuity.
What are you doing?
I'm making chocolate, of course. How do you like it? Dark, white, nutty, absolutely insane.
Many people have come here to sell chocolate. They've all been crushed by the chocolate cartel. You can't get a shop without selling chocolate, and you can't sell chocolate without a shop.
No daydreaming.
What are we gonna do, Willy?
Huh.
Huh?
Huh.
A double huh.
Do you have a pencil and paper?
Uh-huh.
I got an idea.
So there's chocolate, and there's chocolate. Only one
can make
your eyes pop out, there's chocolates.
This is why our neighbours love us.
We did check. We checked that there was nobody around before we did that. So we're back. We have seen Wonka. We have driven home and dropped the kids off safely.
Safely.
Safely. The kids are safe, and now we're out for a walk. So a little bit. I'll tell you. Normally on the Cinemile, if it's your first time. Firstly, there are no spoilers until we get to Spoiler Street. But also, you know, this is normally our, we come out of the cinema, flip on the recorder, and it's our instant reaction. But, you know, we had a little bit of extra time here dropping the kids back and getting them settled. And we have since, in that short period, we stuck the Wonka soundtrack on.
We've listened to the whole soundtrack.
In the car and listened to it again in the kitchen. And we've listened to the whole thing through. And my God, this
is incredible.
Instant classic. This is, and it's discovered in the credits because I was like, who wrote these songs? It was Neil Hannon, Irishman, and most probably best known for heading up the Divine Comedy, and what an incredible job he has done.
I tell you I had shivers down my spine watching
so
this film.
Good.
It's rare to sit in front of a film and feel like this is so confident and the musical numbers are so good that this movie could be 40 years old.
Yes,
It feels like an established.
It feels
classic.
Like a modern classic. Kids, just got birthed.
The kids were gobsmacked, and it's interesting because we went to see Wish last weekend, which they both really liked. This is a different planet of a reaction from the kids. Like mouth open, like shocked. Like as soon as the film ended, they're like, "Who's your favorite character? Who? What songs do you like?" Like sing. They were singing the songs on the way home. Like they'd absorbed the lyrics already. Yeah.
But also from my perspective,
wow.
It is, you know, I thought Wish was good and I liked it. But when you see when this comes out and you're just like, that's how it's done.
This is jumping like, off the screen.
This is like the songs in this are
Chalamet.
Just...
Oh, unreal.
All right, so let's talk about that. So firstly, it's clear we liked it.
I loved
this movie.
I would go and watch it again right now.
Same. I would walk right back in, happily. Listening to the soundtrack was like reliving it, and it was just...
The kids said they want to go again.
Joyous.
We might go again over Christmas.
But yes, Timothée Chalamet. So I think, you know, we spoke earlier, before we went in, about the Chalamet bias.
No, it wasn't a bias. It was just awareness.
No, I had an absolute bias. Every time I saw a picture of him dressed as Willy Wonka, I thought, this is just like, I hate this. And I don't know why. But now having seen the movie, all that has been dispelled, because I think he did a fantastic job. Not only did he do a great job, he's kind of an inspired casting choice, because he's the right age. I looked up who else was in the mix. And it's interesting. There were three other people considered by Warner Brothers. Donald Glover, which I think he would have been an interesting choice.
He'd be really good, but he's a bit old, I think. Because it's supposed to be
again,
him when he's like a teenager.
He's 40.
Basically.
Like, he's too old. And who else? Ryan Gosling. Again, would like too old, but also...
Like, obviously, he'd be amazing.
What a year he'd have had.
But it would kind of be silly. Like,
he would own all the songs of the year.
He's too old.
He's
also,
too old.
He's Ken. Like, he can't be in another musical
exactly.
this year.
And that the other one is... Ezra Miller, which this is 5 years ago, was in the mix. So Timothée Chalamet, yeah, perfect age for this, because I think
he's basically playing like a 19-20 year old Wonka.
Yeah, but also the sort of childhood enthusiasm that Willy Wonka maintains into old age is very kind of creepy and disturbing on a Gene Wilder or a Tim Burton. And that is, to be fair, what kind of made that character very interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean Johnny Depp. But I always found that kind of... And with Gene Wilder, it was always this like childlike sort of darkness, and he made it interesting. Johnny Depp just went completely overboard and made him Michael Jackson, and it was just creepy. But on a younger man, firstly, it just kind of... It works. He's a lot closer to childhood. And also...
He's a daydreamer. Oscar said to me, which I couldn't believe, I'm so proud of our kid interpreting a film like this. When we left, he said to me, "So it's a film about daydreaming." That's what he said about the film.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And it is. It's about a young guy dreaming about his life ahead of him with like all the optimism that a world of imagination would give you, and it totally makes sense with the later Gene Wilder. We're scrapping, we're not even mentioning Johnny Depp. Totally makes sense with the later Gene Wilder. It makes sense with the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory book, but it's entirely its own story, and he's a different person because he's younger. And
they give him an emotional arc.
But he's so wonderful.
The other thing I really liked about Timothée Chalamet's performance is that it's like surprisingly restrained.
Yeah, very restrained.
Don't you think so?
Yeah.
Like because the inclination, I think I expected this whenever I saw this, maybe why I was off put by
because it's the
pictures.
Costume.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh God, this is going to be another like up to 90 over the top performance a la Johnny Depp. But actually, it's incredibly restrained. He's like, he's got the weirdness and the quirkiness, but it's expressed, I think very subtly. Mm-hmm. But what he brings to it is an emotional sort of angle, which was like somebody, he comes into this city with a naivety,
but an
eagerness.
And he's like, I'm gonna be a chocolatier. Yeah, and like, as if you could just do that.
And straight away, this isn't a spoiler, but there's an opening number which expresses him arriving in a new city and just his coins dwindling away in the matter of one song.
Yeah.
And that, by the end of that song, and this is, 5 minutes into the movie, I was like, I'm in. I like this guy.
We turned to each other.
And I want him to succeed.
And we were just like, wow.
Yeah.
After the first musical number, I was like, oh, we're here. The movie's this good already.
Yeah. But like, not only, it doesn't even maintain that standard, it exceeds that standard.
Yeah.
I think this is just a tremendous movie.
Unbelievable other characters. So his friend Noodle, apple strudel. Some people doodle. Kids are obsessed with that one.
The wordplay in these songs is incredibly good.
We're not even giving up.
I mean, how do you rhyme? He rhymes chocolate with a million made up words, and it's I could not. Like,
he's like chocolate.
Watch your confidence skyrocket.
Yeah. And put some chocolate in your pocket.
Oh, so good.
Noodle, I love her.
She's wonderful.
I love how diverse it is. Like, it's funny because we were watching Home Alone with the kids the other day, which they loved as well, and we were just like, there's not a single non-white person in Home Alone. Like, it's really jarring when you watch old films, and I can't really remember the original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but I feel like it was the same. This film is just so diverse. I just love all the characters in it, but that's not why I love Noodle. She's just a phenomenal actress. She's a brilliant singer. Like, her voice, like, she is a better singer than Timothée Chalamet.
Yes,
that's not a criticism of him, he's a brilliant singer. She's just like,
oh, she's gifted.
She's a gifted singer.
Yeah, yeah.
Her voice is so beautiful and so pure. She is so wonderful. This is like young friend, I guess she's maybe like 11. I loved all of their scenes together.
But again, then, imagine like Ryan Gosling having a relationship with a child.
He feels like her peer.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think he comes across, I don't know what age he is in real life, but he comes across as very young in this film. Now, I know it was shot a few years ago as well. And then you just have these incredible like other cast members like Olivia Colman.
Oh, the supporting cast is
Hugh Grant
so
as the Oompa-Loompa is the most wonderful casting. And it's funny because our kids don't know Hugh Grant like I do, like romantic hero that I used to love. I'm like, to the kids, that's the baddie from Paddington 2. Like, they know him as an old man in kids' films. And I love that different generational view of like the same actor. And he's wonderful in it as well. It was just so good.
That's inspired casting.
I love the three chocolatiers.
Yes, I'm not the biggest fan of Matt Lucas, but he doesn't kind of get.
He was the
and actually, a few of his jokes didn't land for me. I thought they were a bit weird.
But
he was fine.
Look,
it didn't.
We're incoherent here. The film is about, it's a prequel to Wonka. He arrives in Paris and he wants to set up a chocolate shop. And
I don't think it's Paris. I've just looked it up. It's supposed to be some. I think it's like some non-disclosed Bavarian city.
Oh, okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think it's a specific.
You don't think it was specific either.
Location.
I just interpreted it as Paris, but it's that kind of feel about it. But it's really whimsical and glorious, and like looks like it's set in the past, and it's really colourful, like you'd expect. And basically, he encounters some bad guys. Olivia Colman being a brilliant bad guy, he makes a lot of friends in this lovely friendship group. And then it's kind of follows his journey as he tries to sell chocolates in the city. And that's really the plot that we should have actually started this review of, but we got excited.
just so I'm beaming.
I'm buzzing. I'm like absolutely buzzing.
Absolutely. What so a happy. Surprise this movie
it's
was.
It's like the joy of cinema, and just seeing it with our kids was so special. I'd go and see it again by myself. I've usually texted like all my family being like, you have to go and see Wonka.
Yeah.
Should we? I think we've gushed over it. We think everyone should go and see it. I love this kind of big, I think this is the time of year where you should always have like a really good, like big family movie to go and see. This is it. You don't need to be with kids at all. It's for any age. But like our kid who's nearly 4 loved it. So that's as young as you can actually go with it.
Now we should say though, Elliot, our youngest.
A little bit restless.
He was restless, yeah.
But he loved it.
He didn't have in Wish, but Wish was a bit shorter as well. And it's a cartoon.
Like live action doesn't hold young kids' attention.
There were a few moments. Yeah, he was a bit sort of up in his seat a bit. Yeah. But Oscar, our 6-year-old, was
gobsmacked.
Enthralled.
He had his mouth open at one point. But in fairness to Elliot though, like the 3, nearly 4-year-old, when the songs were on, he was in trance.
I mean, they were so good. But he kept turning to me. He asked the most crucial question anyone can ask about a musical, and he doesn't have a whole lot of experience with musicals. Why, Daddy, why are all those people singing?
And you're like, they just are. Yeah. He expects it in a cartoons, but the little live action he's seen maybe hasn't had that. But it was so sweet, and as soon as we got home, the other thing Elliot wanted to do was watch more Oompa Loompa videos because he's obsessed. So we were watching the old Oompa Loompa videos on YouTube, which totally stand up. Now, one other thing that I'm going to get to before we get to Spoiler Street was just the score of this film. It's not just the music. They tease World of Pure Imagination, which is obviously Willy Wonka's
from the
song.
Off, which is honestly one of my favourite songs of all time.
I know, I remember thinking that when I was home. I was like, Dave loves this song. Anyway, that's teased beautifully throughout the score, and it's really beautiful, the use of that song as well, and the score and the kind of throwbacks to the kind of original movie.
Yeah, and we won't speak too much about it, but you get a bit of the Oompa Loompa song and the Pure Imagination. It does feel very much like it's a direct tie to the Gene Wilder movie.
100%.
Which is an interesting one because I don't think Roald Dahl wasn't a fan of that.
Well, wasn't that, am I wrong on this, but I believe the original book was called Charlie and Chocolate Factory, but that movie's called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, correct.
So that movie centered him more.
It's in America, which is, you know.
I used to hate that as a kid.
He wasn't happy about any of that.
I used to hate as a kid that Roald Dahl stuff was in America. I get past that now. Now, this is in some sort of nondescript European city with various accents.
But actually, let's talk about that, because I found that a really interesting approach, this sort of, and it fits well with Paul King's sort of magical realism world. Where, this felt like just an interesting blend of German, Parisian, English. And Keegan-Michael Key's in this as the chief of police and just has a straight-up New York accent for no reason.
And
I'm like, this is great.
You had to leave to bring Elliot out to the loo, but Sally Hawkins shows up and she's got a fake Irish accent.
Oh.
So his mom is Irish.
Is she Irish?
I don't think so. Okay. It didn't sound right, but it was definitely an Irish accent.
I missed a crucial bit of like backstory.
Yeah, you did miss that. It was lovely. Anyway, right, we are going to Spoiler Street now for Wonka.
Okay, before we go to Spoiler Street though, we're going to take a very quick little ad break here. Okay, so full spoilers now for Wonka. You have been warned.
And don't listen because you're like, oh, I know Willy Wonka, I know the story. Actually, don't listen to this. Go and watch it, even if you think, oh well, I know, because I would like the story really surprised me.
Yeah, I knew nothing. Yeah. And from the first 15-20 minutes I was like, this is interesting. It's like domestic servitude, not even domestic, it's just like, it's like modern slavery, right?
It was just
very interesting. It was thing very first much, way for it to
in
go
the, in the kind of Dickensian tradition of like a workhouse.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it really fits in this
scrub.
A lot of it fit in kind of visually with like the Paddington prison stuff. It had a real feel to me of like Oliver Twist something. And I really enjoyed that aesthetic of it. I just love every bit
The set designs were so good, weren't they?
The set designs are so good. I love that like at his core, Willy Wonka is an inventor. And I love when he, like the heist where he comes up with the whole plan where he's going to escape
the
laundry.
Oh my God, the heist is so funny.
And he's invented a machine.
500 silent chocolate obsessed monks.
Oh, this is so like, weird.
What a sentence.
I love how Rowan Atkinson always shows up and just gets the best little roles and things and then goes out again. That whole plot, like the whole police chief, they've got chocolate under the city, they're bribing people, they've got a cartel. Like that was so fun. I want to make one point that I didn't, the only thing in this film I didn't like was I don't like when actors are in fat suits, and I don't like fat jokes. And this film did both. I understand the point that they were bribing the police chief with chocolate, but I think the effect could have been his face is covered in chocolate, like the gag when he opens the car door and all the wrappers come out. Like, I kind of got that. I don't think the joke should ever be that someone is fat, and I didn't like that. It's the only bit of the film I didn't like.
Yeah. I know that's a tricky one.
And anyway, that aside, I love I gotta say
I found that funny and I laughed, but I agree that's potentially insensitive
because there's people who are insensitive. But also, it's not insensitive. I just don't think someone being fat's a joke.
Oh, I see.
The joke it was that he ate too many chocolate.
But it's the output of him eating too much chocolate.
Yeah,
right?
But there's other ways of demonstrating that output. Because it is funny that he ate like 10,000 boxes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just felt like that was just unnecessary.
That was a good song as well. When they were trying to negotiate with him, you know, 100 boxes.
Yeah, that was amazing. And I love when
he was fantastic.
He was so good. I love the, you know, you never had chocolate like this.
Oh, that's my favorite song.
That sequence, because we hear that earlier in the song and in the film, and then we hear in this incredible sequence where he's jumping in and out of the trains of the city.
Oh, so good.
He's like doing magic tricks, but then the police chief,
the choreography is amazing in
the three chocolatiers, he even says to them in that, but you've never had chocolate like this, and they're like, we know, and they're all eating it, like everyone's like our kids were like, we want to taste Wonka chocolate so bad. I went online to try and buy it, because you used to have, there used to be a Wonka brand chocolate by Nestle.
No, there's still a thing.
It's gone.
Oh, stop, really?
Didn't find it yet. I'd be surprised if someone doesn't bring it out again off the back of this. You can buy like the Everlasting Gobstoppers, but they're not in this film, so any point. But yeah, just the whole heist thing, escaping from the laundry thing, the whole subplot about Noodle and her family. So beautiful.
Oh, it's lovely. Yeah.
When she
finds
her
also
mom.
him learning to read and then eventually like using that power to find her mom.
Oh my god.
In the ledger.
It's so good.
Lovely touches.
And I love when she comes in on the chocolate song and goes, well, there's literate
and illiterate.
And then she's like, can you read this? And he goes, no, not a bit of it.
This podcast is us just singing.
The other bit is like, I love the stuff with him and his mom, which you missed, where she was basically like, every birthday she'd like get one bean of she'd buy one bean of chocolate, and eventually she'd make him a bar every year for his birthday with Wonka on it. And the last
real
bar,
shades of Charlie there.
Real shades of
and
Charlie.
And his grandpa.
Yeah. And the last bar she made him before she died, he never opened. And she had said to him, he's like, what's the secret of your chocolate? And she said, you know, I'll tell you when you're older, and someday when you've got your own chocolate shop, I'll be there with you. So kind of throughout the film, he kind of thinks that when he opens the chocolate shop, his mom will be there. And he's really upset when that doesn't happen. And then at the very end of the movie, he finally opens his bar and it says,
oh, it's lovely.
The secret is enjoy it with people you love.
It's not about, you know, it's not about the chocolate. It's about the people who you share
it with. And then he breaks off a cube for each of his friends, and I just lost it at that point.
I mean, it's incredibly saccharine, but by that point in the movie, it sells.
It totally works
so well, and I was bawling.
And then he sees her, and in the crowd, and she blows a.
Just hit myself in the face with an umbrella.
You okay?
Yeah.
They see each other in the crowd, and she's like, blows him the kiss or whatever, and it's just so beautiful. And I thought that whole message as well for kids is, it's not about a secret ingredient. And I think in life people always strive for that. It's like, I just need this or I just need that and I'll be happy. And she's saying, no, it's about the people. It's not about the thing, whatever
exactly.
That thing would be.
That's so much of life. I mean, my dad always used to say that it's not about, life is about people.
Yeah.
Like, and anything in life is. Like, music is best shared with people. Yeah. Anything is.
Like, now, a movie like this, to see, I think everyone should see it in the cinema because it would still be delightful at home, but...
Oh, you want to see this on the big screen. Like, the sets are so... Yeah. The choreography, the music. This is an example of just everything working in symphony and everyone firing at their best.
Yeah.
Like, this movie doesn't put a foot wrong. Now, I will give it a minor nitpick on that point, on the ending, and this is so minor and can be easily explained away, but what threw me a bit was that I love that sentiment, it's not about the chocolates but the people you share it with, and he's made all these friends along the way. Beautiful, lovely end to this movie. But as a prequel to Willy Wonka, it doesn't quite work, because and maybe a lot changes in the next few decades for him, clearly it does. But in Willy Wonka, you're presented with a lonely old man who is isolated, never comes out of his chocolate factory, has to run a competition to find a successor. Now,
there's two things though. One, you're talking about someone who's arguably 18 to someone who's arguably 50.
Yeah.
So you don't know what goes on in someone's life.
Sure.
Secondly though,
and that's the explanation.
The film does not finish on him opening a chocolate shop. Crucially, it opens on him opening a factory.
Yeah.
He never goes and revisits the shop thing. Yeah. So he's already moved into factory mode, which is in and of itself
more,
already
you're, one distance. You're a bit more removed.
You're already
okay,
removed
yeah,
from the customer. He's kind of feels like he's sorted Noodle's problems. He's left everyone. They're all going back to their own jobs and their own people. Like, he's not.
That's true. So maybe he just never gets a friendship group again.
I don't know. Who knows what goes on? But
you know what I mean. It's a minor nitpick, and it does get explained.
When at the end he walks into the factory, I honestly never expected them to play Pure Imagination.
And why not? People are too afraid to lean into the nostalgic stuff.
Yeah, I thought
sometimes.
It was just going to be teased in the score.
They'd earned it.
They really earned it. He's a lovely voice for it. Like, he sings like he's actually a better singer than Gene Wilder. I know, because I went back and then listened to the Gene Wilder one. I'm out of control on it. He's a lovely, sweet voice for it. I almost think, and this is maybe me just thinking too much about it because I'm obsessed, but I think, like, he saved his best vocal for that song. Like, I'd say he put a lot of work into singing that song. He just, to me, when you listen back to the soundtrack,
yeah, because it's like a high register, isn't
it? I just felt like he put the most emotion into it.
Yeah,
I could be imagining. It was a wonderful end. Him and the Oompa Loompa. I just thought, what a perfect script.
Yeah, and also, do you know what? It's very, we see a lot of bad prequels as
really
well
bad prequels.
In cinema. And this should also be applauded for doing that job incredibly effectively, because it doesn't over-egg. It uses just the right amount of nostalgia. It doesn't rely on it. I would say the originality of this outweighs the nostalgia tenfold.
Oh, 100%. And also, to your point about it needing to be young, and to my point about there's like a 30-year gap then, it's okay. It doesn't have to all line up with the real film.
Exactly.
Or the original film, because loads of time will have passed and who knows. Whereas when a prequel often, like, exactly tries to just signpost every single thing that you're going to see later.
Exactly. I.e., how did Han Solo get his name
or
and,
like,
his gun?
I'm like, have Charlie's grandparents when they were young be in the story.
Exactly. That would have been a bad move.
Like, all that kind of stuff that we don't need. Whereas this setup that he loves inventing, loved his little chocolate machine, by the way. I love, like, him going to take giraffe milk, like, all that mad stuff. He loves inventing. He's obsessed with making the best chocolate in the world. He's, like, befriended this Oompa Loompa. And he is mad. Like, he's quirky. They kind of demonstrate that to us as well.
Yeah.
So I think they've set everything up for us.
It's an underdog story at its core, which is an incredibly satisfying narrative.
Who was the actor?
Trope.
I did not recognize him. The really skinny English guy who was one of the baddies. Like, I knew his face.
He's in Ghosts. He's one of the Ghosts.
And also the lead
from Ghosts is in this. And also, well, the
I knew him.
And also, well, I'll tell you, the other Ghosts connection is Simon Farnaby, who played the zoo guard, is the Tory Ghost.
Of course.
And he's also the co-writer of this movie and Paddington 2.
Right, because there were so many people that would pop up for a second in this film, and I'm like,
and he was also
from?
Here's another, it's like 6 degrees, this movie. He's also a Mighty Boosh regular, along with Rich Fulcher, who played the American comedian who was the zookeeper. There's another zoo reference in the Mighty Boosh, which was also directed, I think all or most of it was directed by Paul
Kane. Wow, okay. Can we talk for a second about
And also, just like, sorry, can we just... go on, sorry.
I want to talk about how the fact that Willy Wonka just goes around drugging everyone in the town. Like, that poor zookeeper's minding his own business.
Yeah. So inappropriate.
He's so drunk. He's, like, phoning people he shouldn't be phoning. And I was like, it's fine because it's, like, magic and it's a bit of fun. But I'm like, he's going around growing people's hair. He's making people fly.
But actually, that was always a part of the Willy Wonka character. I mean, he brings five children into his incredibly dangerous factory and transforms their physical bodies and lives forever.
This film is a really good example of, like, doing more than you expect in the plot. Because I thought when he finally opened the shop, I was like, oh, this is it. And then the shop is absolutely spectacular. And then the whole thing burns.
Well,
that's when I looked at Oscar. And when I tell you, he was like,
He was like, what's going on?
He could not believe that had happened, because I don't think he's ever seen such stakes against a character in a movie.
I know. To all happen so quickly. Now, can I say what I thought was a slight missed opportunity?
What?
But it did make sense for the plot. In that moment when that happens, you know, you see the man's hair turn blue and you're like, uh-oh. I thought in my head, and it all starts going wrong, I thought, oh, this is the true origin story of Willy Wonka, the man who focuses on innovation at all costs.
I mean, it kind of is, though.
And doesn't think about the impact to human beings. And I was like, this is really interesting that they've done the true impact and of his like ingenuity and casual disregard for human life.
Yeah.
And ties perfectly into Willy Wonka and the later movies. But no, it turns out he was like sabotaged by Bleacher and Scrubbit, which I think was a missed opportunity. I think it's a more interesting character arc for him to realize that, you know, he's not quite ready. You know, he needs to do a bit more testing on his chocolate.
Yeah, but he never gets the character arc though, because we see what happens to him later in the next movie. We can't have a cautious Willy leaving this movie.
I guess. Well, you've got a happy Willy leaving this movie, and he's later not happy. So.
Well, yeah, but that's different. That's like that's different than a realization that you need better quality control in your chocolate.
Anyway, again, minor nitpick.
Very minor. But the shop sequence was so beautiful.
Oh my god, that's another one where I'm like, this and Barbie in the same year.
Oh.
Like whoever is building these sets.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Like just give them loads of Oscars,
yeah,
or whatever
wonderful.
The equivalent of set design work
I
is.
I think we need to wrap up because it's starting to rain a lot. I know I just want to keep talking about this movie. We have to end on one of the songs.
Which
has to be Chocolate.
Which one?
The one.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so we'll give you a bit of the song, however much we're allowed to use with fair usage rights.
I don't think they'll be too cross at us because we've just given them an absolute
review. But you're allowed to. We've editorially reviewed and sung those songs.
Yeah.
So now you must sample it. Must like a sample of chocolate.
Yeah.
But before we go, I guess, yeah, I mean, just this feels like just an instant classic for me. I'll watch this every year. And also, like, Paul King. Like, he did the hat trick.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Like, Paddington's 1 and 2 and this, like, absolute all-timers and a perfect extension of his like magical realist eye, which
universe.
We saw from in the origins in The Mighty Boosh, and is like, this is a man who is so perfectly suited to creating wholesome family entertainment with character, and I would confidently give him any of our childhood memories.
On this very podcast I regret the slightly negative Paddington review I did at the time, Paddington 2. I think I was just really tired, to be honest. I made a very small baby, and I wasn't feeling it. But on rewatch, I really like it. So,
and also, I mean, look, that's the other thing about this podcast where we do instant reactions, is that your reactions to something can vary,
change, or
your opinions of a film can change and vary over time. So yeah.
But to me, I love the Paddington movies, but this is next level. This is beyond, like, completely beyond.
Well, I think there's not a lot of.
It's a musical.
There's no musical numbers if any, not that I can recall. Whereas this is him working with Neil Hannon, a perfect marriage.
Like, absolute up there with the Barbie soundtrack. Unbelievable. Right,
yeah, I didn't think anything could top the Barbie soundtrack this year, but here we are. So anyway, look, sorry for the gush. Thanks for listening. Hope you guys also enjoyed it and checked it out. Also interested to hear if you didn't enjoy it and why. Email us the Cinemile. Yeah, tell us what's wrong with you. thecinemile@gmail.com, or we're on Instagram and Letterboxd at the Cinemile.
And most of all, if you want to give us a Christmas gift, the greatest gift you can give the Cinemile is to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is. We greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, it really helps us out. And thank you very much for listening.
Bye.
Well, there's chocolate, and there's chocolate. Only Wonka's makes your confidence skyrocket. Put your hand into your pocket, get yourself some Wonka chocolate.
Madam, just one kiss.
Yes, please.
You've never had chocolate like this.